listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, November 15th. My name is Michael Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Michael. You know, as always, I'm very glad to be here, especially tonight we have a guest.
Absolutely. As always, I'm glad to have you and super glad to have our guest and so happy to see those joining us live in the chat. Always look forward to catching up with you. And of course, we appreciate those that take the time to listen to us from the archives. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore, science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. As always, we'll begin tonight with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are: 1, do no harm, do right. 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4, we are all equal, one planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will creates self-completeness. 8, metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9, expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. I'm so excited for our guest and our topic tonight. We have special guest, Jerry Conklin, and the topic of paying it forward. Welcome, Jerry.
Hi, thank you.
So happy to have you.
I'm really glad to have Jerry on too, and we have lots to talk about, the least of which I want to mention to everybody that Dr. Kelly awarded Jerry the Pay It Forward Humanitarian Award. And you want to explain what that is, Michael?
Absolutely. So the Humanitarian Pay It Forward Award is a very special award that's given out at ICMH, at the Metaphysical Institution, and just going to my notes here. I'm very prepared. Don't question me. I'm very prepared. But this is something that, Jerry, you got because of your, really, all the efforts and all the things that you put into, you know, the generosity into helping others. And this is something where, you know, it is just really indicative of somebody who goes out of their way to make life better for those around them.
We appreciate that, Jerry. Thank you very much for that.
I have fun doing it.
Awesome. Well, you have a few things you want to talk about tonight.
Mind reader.
Mind reader. We're always on the same wave, Michael. That's good.
So, in 1968, somebody who was paying it forward themselves handed me a book by Martin Bell called The Way of the Wolf. Mm. And it was a story about, it was a story called Barrington Bunny, and it was about a little bunny who wanted to celebrate Christmas with the other animals in the forest, but they all rejected him because he was different. So he met a silver wolf who tells him that God loves him and that he can share his love with others. And that night, Barrington runs into a little mouse family that's freezing. And so he lays down in the snow, and the little mouse family gathers round his fur and tucks all up in underneath him. And in the morning, the silver wolf finds him, and he had frozen overnight. So the wolf tells him that he's paid the ultimate price for love. And I think that started me on my paying it forward journey. It didn't probably register at that time as much as it's registered in the last year and a half of taking classes and everything I've been through. But just the easiest, simplest, a kind word goes so far and means so much today. And I just think of the person who handed me that book, and it's like, I wish I could find them again because they really changed my life and those who I've helped in just non-conspicuous ways, they've helped them as well.
That's awesome. I think that's you know, every little thing that we do affects others in ways we can't imagine.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's so, just, it's a chain of reaction. It's just, you just never know what you do that's going to help someone else to reach out and help somebody else. It's just.
So when you say in the last year and a half, what in particular has impacted you in the last year and a half, Jerry?
Well, I am at school, absolutely. The fact that I'm still alive from a surgery that should have killed me, all of that and finding myself again and trying to know who the new Jerry was, because certainly a new one. The old one died on the table.
And wow.
So the school here and the people, just the courses, everybody I've connected with have made such a huge impact in ways they probably never even realized.
So do you mind sharing a little more about that, Jerry? Because how long
that's
ago
a very profound
was this?
Statement.
It is. I mean, I'm kind of,
You want the version?
Well, you know, how long ago was it that you had this health incident?
Here's the short version. 2017, I came down with, it was actually a small bowel obstruction. The medical field, if you live in Lancaster, California, and you get the runs for any reason, it's considered that you have Crohn's disease. And
right.
So once you get that on your record, you're screwed in Lancaster, California. And so they just ignored it. And it got to where in 2019, I spent most of the year every other weekend in the ER on morphine because that's all that would take the pain away. And still, they just did nothing but give me different medications. They were just, I was like a guinea pig experiment. So finally, January of 20, I walked in on the 8th. Well, actually, I came in by ambulance, and my ER doctor was there. He says, "You're early." I said, "Yeah, time to die." I had had it. I mean, my body was dead. They took it just, I couldn't do anything else but die. I mean, that was just where I was at. And so he got upset and got all the docs together and took a week and a half to come off all of the drugs they had me on. I'm not even an addict, but God forbid, I can sympathize with them now. I understand what they go through.
Wow.
And the surgery, I do not remember that day. It was supposed to be an hour. It was over 6 and a half, and they took 18 inches of dead colon.
Oh.
And I, far as I knew, I died because I just, nothing. And as you know, I write with a group of spirit children, and one of the, Johnny Blue, who was a Union soldier, came through and asked me to write his story. And it's like, I'm dead. I'm already in heaven. I'm one of y'all. And he said, no, actually you're not. So, I said, yeah, I'll write it. Just let me heal. And that was kind of the, like, the old Jerry was gone. Everybody had left me. I just felt like, God, everybody deserted me. And I had to find a new tribe. And so I decided I'm getting out of California because they didn't succeed, but that didn't mean they wouldn't try again. And we came to Arizona. I got great doctors. I found a tribe. I found people who were like me. And then Reese, who is also one of your students, she goes by a different name with y'all, but I know her as Reese. I was taking manifesting classes because I knew I had to find who the new me was. I didn't know who that was. And she mentioned ICMH, and it's like, oh, I like that. And I signed up, and that was it. And you have been what has made me who I am. The classes, things I learned, everything was just, I'll be grateful in your debt forever.
Wow. I'm just sitting here saying, wow.
Absolutely. I was just going to say, thank you so much for sharing. And, you know, it really kind of brings into, I guess, into even greater clarity when you talk about how, you know, Jerry died at that moment. And in a way, you were forced to, you know, deal with a lot of existential things, and your perspective fundamentally shifted. So in a very real yet metaphorical way, it's 100% true.
Did read, Jerry, that you're 4 questions away from your doctoral.
I am, but now I'm only 3 because in the thingy here, it says that the way to share greatness in the recognition by delivering greatness to the world is through paying it forward. And that's question number 10. How am I going to do my greatness on the world? Wow. So that's one of them.
There you go. That box is checked. And of course, I'm excited for you too. And we're going to be able to call you Dr. Jerry when we see you in chat, when you come on and what have you. Since we're on that topic, I had the description verbatim in an email that I found every other email in the chain except for that one when I was looking for it. But I do have it. And the Pay It Forward Humanitarian Award, in recognition and honor of Jerry's efforts to lighten the load of others by paying it forward, thus delivering greatness to the world. And it is very well earned. I can only imagine all the people that you've helped in terms of broadening their awareness and expanding their own journey by helping them with their tuition and those donations. It's very kind.
You know, Jerry, what comes to mind is I'm sure many people in our chat and in later in the archives can relate to a moment where, whether it's a critical situation such as your own or something else changed their life. And, you know, I was recently talking with a friend who said, you know, she was so sick not long ago. She said, if somebody had given me a gun, I'd have taken care of it. She said, I didn't care. I'm out. Like, when you're that in that place, and I have to share too, I have been in that place. I'm glad to go. And somebody somehow says, nah, you're not done. And you go, what? Okay, so finding a sense of that what is my value then? What is my purpose? How do I find the meaning to my own life changes from yesterday to today, then tomorrow? And what do you think would be one or two things that hit you the most from the Jerry you were before to the Jerry you are after?
And I've been a jack of all trades. I have to say the thing I notice most about me with this, after creating the new Jerry, is I stop and I wait for people. Before, if you started telling me a story, I'd jump in and tell you about my experience because I'm sure I've had the same. And if people, you know, they didn't ask for advice, but if I saw something that you needed to do differently, I'm right there telling you. And that death thing, it all changed it. And reading, you know, coming into the school and learning from, you know, all of that, the leadership and all of that stuff that we went through, the everything. It was like, now do right, do no harm. I sit back and listen. I don't interject anything. I just let people talk. And the people who knew the old Jerry, they kind of hesitate because they're kind of like waiting for me to jump in. It's like, yeah, I don't jump in anymore. You want to ask me some advice? Then I'll share. I'll find you the resources. I will do everything I can to help you. And that's the difference.
So
I paid forward before, but it didn't mean as much as doing it now.
So you're saying, if I'm reading this right, you had changed, but you didn't necessarily know what the skills were, and the school gave you some basic foundational abilities, or let's say,
you gave me a whole new toolbox.
Awesome.
I love it.
So when in the paying it forward, because I'm sure, you know, like you said, from 1968, you had some impacts, and trying to always be a good, loving, generous human being, but now doing it with some measure of thought and awareness. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And, wow. Yeah, and I think it's awareness in our awareness shapes our reality. Our perceptions shape our reality. And when you kind of expand that awareness, you kind of see all these new different avenues to go down, these new roads to explore. And it can be done in a more purposeful way, kind of bringing that philosophy together. So I'm really happy that you shared that. And I can empathize, too, because I still have to work on the very correct philosophy of not giving unsolicited advice. Because I have too long operated under the philosophy that everybody is entitled to my opinion. In fact, it must be foisted upon them. But
you know, I must have known you because that's what I had.
Yep. So.
So where do you think that comes from, though, when we want to share so much? Like, what is the motivation? Because you want to do good, but the imposing. And now that you're in hindsight, Jerry, what do you think that imposing one's will is? What do you think that there, and I know a lot of psychologists might have a field day with this, but what do you think from your perspective the intent or the foundation of that behavior was? She's thinking.
Yeah. Probably, I don't know. I guess I felt gifted or something, like I was special, and I did all these things, and I saw people who were struggling in their life, and while mine hasn't been perfect at all, I still thought I could give them advice and resources that would fix their life. And I didn't understand, no one can change anybody, and you have to want to change before there can be change.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't understand that back then. I just thought, oh, you're just being stupid and not changing. Fine, deal with it. Now I understand it totally. I understand what's behind it, and it just makes it so much easier.
Mm-hmm. When everything. Seeing the pieces and how they fit together, almost.
Yes, yes. And before, I thought they needed to change, and that was just the way it was. Now, I can look back and see, or I can look now, and in helping people, however it goes, it's like a wonderful thing to help them. I get great pleasure out of it. They may not, you know, do what I say or whatever. That's okay. Before, it just made me angry. Now it's like, I'm good with it. Because if you want to know, 9 times out of 10, they come back and ask. And it's like, oh, okay, sure.
So the difference in your paying it forward from how the old Jerry was to the new Jerry, what do you think the difference is? How can you articulate what the difference is, because you've always been good and giving and kind.
I think I did that before. I did it with, I don't want to say, I think they should do something for me, you know, whatever that attitude is. I can't think of the word. But I think I probably did it with strings, though I didn't really see the strings. But now when I do it, I can look back and see where I put strings on stuff, whether they were conscious or unconscious. There were strings. There's no strings now. This is just beautiful. It's just, it's truly giving for me.
So giving with, it's unconditional. I don't care. I'm going to give you $5. I don't care what you do with it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly.
It, wow. Such a key, I think, to many people.
I want to say, if I can just say this for a moment, to share that shows a tremendous amount of vulnerability in owning who we used to be. Because that makes this ordinary abnormal world, that would make us feel vulnerable to share that, because then people would say, oh yeah, I know who you used to be. But to me, that's your strength, when you can say, yeah, I used to have strings attached and my love was conditional because blah blah, and I don't feel that way anymore. It's that sense of freedom and honesty and openness that gives, I don't know, I think that's infectious to other people, to say, oh, maybe I've been a little like that too. Mm-hmm. Do you think so, yes. Jerry?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So that's another way of giving forward, even if it's in, you know, kind of that, I don't know, maybe it's a passive-aggressive way. But it's that subtlety of non-conditional. I know a woman many years ago said, you know, Vicki, I want you to pick somewhere that you would like to take your grandchildren. I'll prepay it and you can take your grandkids there. And I said, huh? She said, I just want to do something for you. You know, something you and your grandkids can do together. And I said, no, thank you. I mean, they do pretty much what they want to. What that was to me was a measure of control. She wasn't just saying, hey, I want to gift you this to go take your grandkids somewhere. She was going to prepay it and control it. And I thought, she doesn't even know what she's doing by doing that. Yeah. It's an unconscious behavior on her part, not like being supposedly a friend and wanting to, this very generous gesture, and I was very appreciative of that. But there's an undercurrent of not trusting that I might use it for what she wanted it to be, you know? And like, well, you think I'm going to go out in a bender or something with that money? I don't know. And I think that there's, when we try to control things, there's these underlying messages that can affect relationships in ways we don't really understand at the time.
It's that message that it's all about me. You know, I'm the one that's, you know, when you're going on this, you know, event with your grandkids, well, don't forget about me. I'm the one that's doing this all for you, you know, that kind of thing. And I agree that it's not always conscious, but I do think it is indicative of, you know, behavioral trends. And I was just thinking earlier, you know, it's refreshing, Jerry, what you were saying a moment ago, when you get to this point where it's unconditional, you're doing right to do right. And it's refreshing, because in this world so often there are just strings everywhere, strings attached to every action. It's all a social manipulation of sorts. And I think absolutely it is a power to be open and to not be afraid of one's past and the journey that we've been on. The fear of honesty, I think, comes from a lot of that idea of them esteem, of always worrying about the other's opinions and putting so much weight on it. You know, we take our power back when we take away that them esteem, when we remove that from the equation. And I think that it is really profound how one of the most secure things you can do, one of the strongest things you can do, is to be just honest and truthful.
But not easy for most people.
Well, and the them esteem That's who died. Let me tell you. Because I had to suck up for everybody being an officer's wife. That wasn't me, but that's what I did. That's who I became. And let me tell you, she died on that table. I got up off that table eventually 2 days later because they'd had me under so long. That's another long story. But when I got up, I just looked at myself in the mirror and said, you have self-esteem. That's who you are, and you will never be them esteem again. And I haven't. And that's been a long 3 years of practicing that. Because I have lots of opportunities. And nope, I've stuck with my self-esteem. Mm.
So, Jerry, what do you think that is? And for those who are listening, I think this is going to be a really important question. Who are living with chronic pain, what is it that makes you, do you feel, want to continue to live and seek help? And those who are living with chronic pain, what would you have to say to those folks?
Oh, goodness. I understand life from a bigger picture. I believe that everything that happens to us is an opportunity to learn a lesson for our soul. And I think that all of that is a part of that. Pain, especially, there's so many things where it starts, and most of it is in negative thoughts, negative talk, negative, you know, pictures. The body just finally says, have I got your attention yet?
Yeah. You know, I was reading a book once, and the character was going through pain, and he was just kind of telling his own body, thank you for telling me about the problem. I appreciate that. And go away. It kind of is the kind of the long and short of it. Now, that's obviously a mass simplification, but I think having a good sense of communication with one's body and
yes,
what it's trying to tell you, I guess, is what I'm really hearing from this.
Well, yes. One of the things Wendy just said in the chat is I feel stress has a lot to do with health. Now, I'm really fortunate. My daughter gifted me tickets to go to see Gabor Mate in Friday, in 2 days, and I'll be happy to talk about that next Wednesday. But one of the things that Gabor Mate says is that we all think we're living in a normal society, but it's really not. It's an abnormal society, and it's not a surprise that we have illness in an abnormal society. And, of course, he goes at length to talk about what that means. But if we're living an abnormal life when we think it's normal, it's bound to affect us in very confusing ways. And so we try to be as conscious as we can, but we're still going to be a casualty in some way that we can't possibly know ahead of time, you know, and so part of what he is saying is to really be more generous to ourselves and kind to ourselves. But when we're in chronic pain, that's very difficult to do. Mm. And I've been there, and trust me, I've had a whole year of Percocets at one point in my life, and, you know, living through that chronic pain. But I also was motivated by things I had to do. I had kids to take care of. I had, you know, a life to live, and there was still a drive to continue. And when you reach that point, Jerry, of saying, nah, you know what, I'm done. And I have reached that point where it's saying, nah, I'm done. And then some weird things happened. You know, in your case, it was the right doctors, the right time, the right everything. Things synchronized into a moment to say, nah, Jerry, you're not done. You've lived in a lot of pain to come to this moment. But I'm also of the thinking that it's chronic pain when a lot of doctors are not diagnosticians. You know, they're more like give you, as you experienced, Jerry, give you more pills to just get rid of the pain and go away. And so I think a lot of the time we're casualties of other people. So,
yes.
You know, there's a certain amount of chaos in the world where we're not given that full, holistic kind of attention. And so that's part of the lesson when we are kind of fighting for ourselves and having to be our own advocate and our own, you know, that power of spirit that says, I want to live, and then finally exhausts itself, says, nah, you know what, if I'm going to die, that's cool. And somebody says, nah, we have to intersect here and give you the right people. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think my ER doc just didn't want me dying on his shift.
It's bad for business.
It could be.
I mean, they were upset too. Why hasn't anybody helped you? And it's like, I don't know. I just enjoy coming here every weekend and getting 3 days of rest in a bed with, you know, bad food. But
you know. I know. So, you know, and we're going to briefly talk about this. You have mentioned in the chat in previous programs that you believe, or there's a theory, so let's just put it out as a theory, of 5 exit points in life. Can you kind of give us an encapsulated version of that theory? Because that's something I've never heard of. So
with the mentors that I have had over my lifetime regarding the spirit world, I believe our soul writes exit points into each lifetime that if we need to get out of it, we have that option. I had 2 near-death experiences, which I consider two of my 5. And this last one, I would have to say I chose that as an exit point. And when you take an exit point, it doesn't necessarily have all the, I don't want to say negativity connected with it, but it's an option for you to come out. You can, on occasion, there are instances of coming back in, but you have a chance to process everything that you've gone through.
See, I find that interesting. I'm like, a lot of my DNA is Viking and Scandinavian, going back to the Sami and my mother's people. And our belief is the day of birth and death is marked. And
yes.
And that's all, that's why we could be so fierce. But I also say that we live in a time where there's so many other possibilities. Like 1,000 years ago, we didn't have heart transplants, kidney transplants, and, you know, all this medication. We had other things. But, you know, if it was your time, use your time. So what I'm kind of hearing from you is that, let's say, hypothetically, over the last 100 years, there's been this segue of potential exit points. Am I hearing that right?
Yes. Each lifetime.
Because I find that I've said to people many times, if you've had a really bad infection and you got antibiotics to save you, that's potentially, you know, where you would have 100 years, 300 years ago would have died.
Absolutely.
You know,
you didn't
go ahead.
Well, you didn't have the antibiotics, but remember, in the olden days, up until probably the last couple of lifetimes, the herbs and natural medicines, I mean, going into Italy and seeing some of the spots, it's alive and well there. They have pharmacies, but they aren't anything like our pharmacies. These are natural medicines, and they're very adamant still on using natural medicines for healing. All the alternative things, they don't have doctors. There's, if you get sick there, you're kind of screwed in a couple places we were.
Explain a little bit more about that. How is the approach to healthcare different?
They believe in the natural plants, the spirit medicine, the different cultures that have their belief in how they view their natural medicine and plants, that they work homeopathics and plants, natural remedies, they work with the body, not against the body. The medicines you take today that are prescribed, you look at the side effects. The side effects will kill you before the medicine or the illness, disease, whatever it is you've got will. Because they work against the body. They tear your body down, whereas the natural herbs and all of that, that works with your body to build it up and give you the natural immunities.
Well, would you say it's fair, though, that there could be a combination of the Western and homeopathic kinds of approaches to healthcare could be combined?
Absolutely.
You know, because one thing I'll say to you is that homeopathic antibiotics don't work as quickly as other, you know, pharmaceutical antibiotics, which can work within 24 hours and you start getting better. But it does take other natural products longer. I've been there.
But they're working in conjunction with the body. They're not shocking the body.
Right. That's true. I understand.
Absolutely, they could work together, and I wish I could find somebody who does that.
Yeah. So with these exit points and what your spirit guides have told you, and you know, claiming, and again, I'm not disputing it. I'm just saying this is new to me, so I'm kind of a listener trying to sort this through, saying five exit points that would be predominant in somebody's life. Could there be more exit points in the event of?
You know, I don't know. I've always been taught that there's five. But I also know that you can go in and change your exit points. So, I've seen that happen.
You know,
so I don't know.
Just to jump in here real quick, this is just came to mind because you were just mentioning it. I keep getting the sense that we have our conscious mind, and then there's some kind of, in this, in your theory, that there's also a, I don't know what you would call it, the soul, if you will, that's making decisions that you're not consciously aware of, you know, changing your exit points and things like that. Or do you think it is something that's in your idea, the conscious mind of this life doing that?
Well, I think we have, what's it called, free will?
So when you're talking about changing the five exit points, that's something that you're consciously doing in this life, fully aware. You're like, well, I don't like that exit point. I'm going to swap it out for this one.
Yeah, but I think it takes more than just something
that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm also very interested. You're talking about, you were in Italy where you found these homeopathic pharmacies?
Yes.
I wouldn't have guessed that. Kind of some of the villages and things like that have kind of held to the old ways.
Yeah, I want to say it was like in Bari.
Okay.
It was a little small village up on the top of the boot below Venice. But out in Tuscany even, they don't have access to, you know, medical doctors. You're going to drive 4 hours if you're lucky.
Oh, wow.
So they do rely upon that, and they have their gardens that have all of the herbs and stuff they use.
That's interesting. That just caught me by surprise. I wouldn't have expected it in a place like that, but it's very interesting. And, you know, I've always been a strong proponent of, you know, it's often called Western medicine, but I don't really think of it as, especially in the modern era, because you see some of the most, you know, profound medical breakthroughs coming from, you know, Asia and the East. But I do believe in a blending, as I think we're all on the same page of that, because if it works, it works. And I think its efficacy and its reliability is kind of what you can point to. And you can find that in natural remedies as well. And I think a lot of the, you know, pharmaceuticals are derived from those natural remedies. And of course, yeah, you have to, it's a hodgepodge of mixed bags when it comes to medicines.
I think too, though, we have, you know, in the last few generations, I'm going to agree with Jerry on this, we have been so far removed from other natural remedies that we don't know enough about it. But if we're honest, we don't know what we're taking with the pharmaceutical either. So
no, we're taking it on somebody's word. You know, it's all probabilities. If you're
chemicals. It's just chemicals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pharmaceuticals.
Chemicals make up everything. They're in the homeopathic stuff too. I mean, chemicals not a four-letter word. You'll hear this nasty-sounding chemical, and it turns out, oh, that's just a super fancy way of saying this or something along those lines. Yeah. But I also, you know, the idea that we only have illness because of the stress of the modern age, I kind of rebel against that notion, because in the most peaceful times, places in history, there have always been illnesses that pop up from bacteria and viruses and the things. You know, we live in a natural world. I mean, humans aren't the only beings out here trying to fight for survival. Viruses and bacteria are fighting for survival too. And I think stress absolutely, absolutely leads to more illness. And I think that you can make a strong argument that, you know, this modern era of heightened stress leads to more illness. I don't find it to be the original, you know, point of illness, though. I don't think illness has an origin point other than other life forms trying to use us to live, just like we eat. They eat us.
Well, I think if we're talking about a natural world, that may be true, but... And I don't know, sometimes I think we're living in a very unnatural world, so I don't know. It's like, whether it's the food we eat, the air we breathe, the water we drink, you know, it's just, you know, it's crazy. You know, Jerry, I want to ask you, because we're, you know, getting on in time here. As you, I know I'm leaping, Michael, so bear with me. As you... are narrowing in on your doctorate. Congratulations to you, by the way. We're going to have a party. Where do you feel you're going from here? What does that mean to Jerry?
Oh, wow. I came into the program thinking, oh, I'm just going to get it, and I'm going to do B, C, and D. And throughout the program, though, that's changed, and I got introduced to, well, like the paraanthropology and the cryptozoology. Mm. But those things just fascinated me. I'm an archaeologist by all my other degrees, so I'd like to go back. I was going to study Chaco and do the canyon, but then I kind of got them esteemed away. Yes. So I would love to go back, taking the knowledge I've used here with the paraanthropology, the human condition, and all of that, and use it to reevaluate some of the stuff that we pulled out of the ground there, seeing it through different eyes, because I've never felt that the Anasazi were a firstborn tribe. So there was so much that the anthropologists and the archaeologists that I worked with, they couldn't explain it. And
so interject here for a sec? Your background is in archaeology?
Yes, ma'am.
That's what you were, an archaeologist?
Yes. Well, an archaeologist and 18 million other things, because I sit still, but I like variety. That's the spice of my life.
See, that came out of nowhere, Jerry, so I had to stop and back up here. You know, it's that backspace delete. Wait a minute, let's go back here. So you were an educated archaeologist who went on to do many other things, and this has reignited you to kind of get back to a base for yourself?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. And then with the crypto, I was doing that report for the crypto class, and there happens to be a crypto cryptid here in Prescott. And so it has been so fun talking with the witness. And I did the whole thing, the whole report and everything. And now I'm going to go search for it just to find out. The guy's really excited about it. And
what
I don't know, I'll write
this?
Paper on it. It's called Clovis. And if you go on the nationalcryptid.org or whatever their thing is, it's a strange looking horse. And it is a horse body with a, not lion, but a mountain lion type head. That's all the cryptid, and that's all that they would, you know, that's all that the witness understood this animal to be.
What's it called?
Clovis.
Clovis?
Strange looking horse, yeah. That's what they call him, Clovis. Nobody knows who named him Clovis. There's only been two witnesses.
Huh. Neither of them named Clovis?
No.
Oh, well.
Bizarre.
So somebody named him Clovis. The drawing that's on the National Cryptid page is similar but not correct. I've got a forensic artist who's going to meet with Tom and draw Tom's, what Tom saw. Because what Tom says and what the Cryptid Society came out with were like two different things.
Well, that's interesting.
I'll get to do my archaeology, what I wanted to do. I'll get to do it with the, you know, with all of this learning together. And then if I can do the cryptid, we've got paranormal research team up in Flagstaff that I'm going to see if I can join. And if they come down here for anything. So it opened up a whole bunch of stuff that I was not expecting.
You know, before the program, we were talking because, you know, I love that area. I have a daughter who lives in Sedona. I've been there many times. But you were talking about the tunnels north of Sedona. And I just want to mention this out of curiosity to people. The Skinwalker Ranch located some kind of a tunnel that goes all the way to north of Sedona?
Yes.
You want to explain
that a little bit
for our listeners?
There's a ranch just north of Sedona, and the tunnel from the original Skinwalker Ranch that they're showing on TV, they found a tunnel that hooks into that ranch, and they've started investigating down there.
Wow.
Because they found some stuff.
You know, people, I want everybody to know this. There's so much to learn. That old adage of every time I think I know something, I know nothing is true. You know, there's so many fascinating things to life, interesting things to learn about.
Mm-hmm.
And it just expands our consciousness and our, you know, kind of mind-blowing at the same time. What
Absolutely.
We believe or don't believe, I think, is not relevant at this moment. It just tells us that there's so much more to learn and how we are as human beings and approaching these things. And as you've said, Jerry, you've got more tools in your toolbox to begin to look at the world. It's like having a new worldview and saying, I've changed. I know more. I'm different. And I need to explore the world in a brand new way. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Oof, you know, that's like being reborn.
Absolutely. And so often I've thought when you ask these questions about things that really have no definitive answer that you cannot prove in a, you know, scientific, repeatable way, they're the funnest things to ask. And they keep your mind sharp and they keep your mind open to new experiences and new awareness. I've always been a little wary of certainty, of the hubris that comes along with it, the notion that you know, someone would know all the ins and outs of existence. And I've always been afraid of belief and dogmatic belief for that reason as well, because if you think you already know the truth and it comes along and, you know, shows itself to you, you're not going to believe it. You're not going to see it.
Yeah.
So I think
Tabitha just put a link in the chat. You know, I know people in the archives are kind of, you know, they miss out on this. But she did put a link for those who are live right now in the chat to the cryptid, the strange horse-like creature spotted in Prescott, Arizona. And it's the National Cryptid Society link. So thanks for that, Tabitha. I appreciate that.
Very much so.
You know, Jerry, your life seems to me to be, well, fascinating. Is and interesting would be really, you know, not great words. It's just, it seems so expansive, and I appreciate that about you. I appreciate that you are sharing so much of yourself in, you know, this very short amount of time. And I would like you to share now some of the literature you've been writing, some of the books. When did you start writing?
My first book came out in 2010 or 11. Okay. A group of spirit children, when I had my first cancer round in 2007, came to me when I was out on an island and said, okay, maybe this could be an exit point, because I didn't want to deal with cancer, even though I'd had some of the best mentors in the world with Dr. Siegel and stuff. But Bernie Siegel, who it's all in thought, and his cancer healing without any type of chemo or anything, but just working through the mind, was amazing. But this group of spirit kids came to me and said, will you write our stories? And I thought, sure, I'm bored. I'll do anything. So I wrote their stories, and what an amazing book and kids it turned out to be. And I've written six. I did update that the last three books. Or the first two I updated. The second one was in 2012. A group of Vietnam soldiers came through. I'd gone to Vietnam to finish the book, found four dog tags there.
Oh,
and
my
I
God.
Came to research trying to, you know, find family and stuff. But they kind of became the focus of that book. And I updated it again because I buried those dog tags under the last helicopter to leave Vietnam.
Oh, wow.
And it was just an amazing adventure with all the soldiers who had passed and everything. So the kids came. The new update is with kids who have been affected by sex trafficking. And it's just, it was horrible. It was horrible to write because of the subject matter, but it was so amazing to see the resilience of the children and to know they understood what was going on from a bigger picture.
So if I'm hearing you right, you get groups of spirits to come to you?
Yes. Well, the spirit kids, there's about 10 spirit kids who started the first book. And they all thought it would be good to do like a little book club and call me their writer. And that kind of started it all. And then now they just, if there's somebody who they feel needs their story told, they'll pop in and say, time to write. And we write. Wow. The third book was about my journey, though that wasn't planned. It was going to be a guy who was executed in Georgia in 1981 and his meal and the research on last meals. If you're rich and you're in jail and going to be executed, what do you choose for your last meal? If you're poor, what do you choose? It was an amazing research opportunity to do that. And then it turned into, they surprised me and said, now it's your turn. So I had to pull from, you know, my growing up experience to pull that last meal together. That's cathartic. If anybody needs to do anything, you got to try that sometime.
Having been a professional writer in my life, I've had such experiences where I'm absolutely compelled to write and write from entities of other world. And yes. I completely understand, Jerry, when it's not even like you have a choice in some way. You have a choice, but it haunts you if you don't.
Absolutely. They will keep you up all night just niggling at you to write. Yeah, the next one's going to be with my Starborn family, so it's kind of fun.
Oh, that's so exciting. So is there a link that we can put in chat for you to access some of your material or the people can contact you?
Sure, I'll type it in. It's my website.
Awesome.
Well, thank you very much for that.
And, you know, some people
might...
I got
some great blogs. Read the blog, especially the one about the chicken.
Okay. You know, a lot of people might think this is off the wall or say, what does that have to do with who we are at IMHS and, you know, and so on. It's all more information to expand our consciousness and all the possibilities of life. And I don't know about five exit points, Jerry. I'm just telling you, I don't know about that. Your experience is yours. I don't know about that. I can say I probably had a few. So we could be in line with each other. I'd have to count to see if there's five, but there's probably more. And that's why I asked about more. But it does give us the stimulation to think metaphysically.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And all the possibilities that we in this three-dimensional world don't always consider. And although a lot of people have looked at me and said, what do you mean your experience? I say, it's a theory. I don't care if you believe it or not. Because it's my experience. And what I hear from you is this center of self to say, this is my experience and I'm sharing it and I don't care if you believe it or not. That's cool. It's just... If you get something from it, that's good. If you don't get something from it, that's okay too. And you continue just to be a good human being, you know, giving forward as much as you can to create life as opposed to just be in it. And I appreciate that so much about you.
Well said. Very well said. You know, I tend to, you know, I always enjoy, listening to all these perspectives and having you on, Jerry, has been an absolute treat. You know, I have always been a big proponent of the I don't know belief. And, you know, I love hearing all the different possibilities and I love engaging on these different theories. One thing I do think is that the universe is massive and varied. And I think that there is so much potential, there's so much diversity that there could be, you know, multiple truths. And I think that's just kind of the importance of the idea of, you know, your truth and our truths, things like that. I've always kind of held too that, you know, there are just some things that are outside of our control. And this idea of exit points is, you know, very fascinating. And then, you know, listening to you talk about your personal life experience and all of the ways that you have paid it forward and how your experience with our community has been so meaningful is... it's meaningful to me. I really appreciate that. And I appreciate you joining us. And it has just been a fantastic discussion.
I had fun. I appreciate it.
See, I told you it'd be fun.
I know.
You know, before the program, Jerry was saying Virgo. She's Virgo. And they like to be planned and structured. And Michael and I are wing it. You know, we're very wing it people.
Don't tell them that.
And she kind of had a moment. And Jerry, I want to say you did awesome.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I'll second that.
It's been a joy to have you on the program. And I look forward to when you hear more about this Clovis thing and your adventures into, you know, investigating. And I don't know, I kind of find it a mystery of lurking and in the rocks and the bushes and all the little vortexes. And I kind of, you know, I got all this imagery in my head because I've been to Prescott. I know where you live.
You know, she knows where you live.
Generally speaking.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know.
And I find Prescott kind of creepy, to be honest. It's like, because there's so much history and it's overwhelming. If you stop and look around, I have to ooh, I have to digest this. It's a moment.
I love
this
it.
History. And so I'm looking forward to maybe having you on in the future. It'd be great.
Absolutely.
Well, I tell you, just doing that report for the class and having to do the thingies where you put them in their phyla and all that kind of stuff, that was working that out with a cryptid. Oh, my goodness. It was amazing. But
awesome.
It's just so much fun. I love research. So whatever Absolutely. I do with this degree, I'm throwing it into research.
I love it.
And a book or two.
Well, it is that time. We've been a little bit over.
It is. But
I don't mind. It's awesome. When we have a guest, it just opens all the doors to so many possibilities.
Absolutely. And, you know, I can't let you go, Jerry, without asking you this, knowing that you have a background in archaeology. Should I see the most recent Indiana Jones movie, or is it not worth it?
Jeez, Michael.
Well, hey, I'm asking the questions people want to know, all right?
Yeah. So. Okay, if you really want to go about archaeology, no.
Oh, of course.
It's good for entertainment.
Of course. I'm obviously being tongue-in-cheek. I think we all know that Indiana Jones is entertainment. And while, yes, it's a, you know, I've modeled much of my existence after Indiana Jones, except for the... Except I'm not a history professor, I don't travel, and I haven't ever seen the Holy Grail. But other than that, I'm like basically Indiana Jones myself. But
start searching for it.
Good advice always,
still
Jerry.
Out there.
Good advice. Here I am making jokes, and you're bringing truth bombs.
I'm good at that.
But
thank you
so much for being with us.
Thank you all.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.
Have a great week, and I want to know next week what you all did to pay it forward.
Homework, and I love it. That's the best guide.
Thing.
Good stuff. So we all have some things we're going to be bringing to the table next week when we come back. And unfortunately, next week it's just going to be Dr. Vicky and me, so it's going to be boring. I know. But we're going to have some good conversations, and I'm looking forward to it. And, yeah, it has come to that time of the evening, and I guess before we wrap up, you know, it's been a fantastic discussion. But, Dr. Vicky, do you have any last thoughts?
Oh, just keep an open mind, everybody. Each of us has a story, and we keep building on that story, and we keep learning on that story. And it's so individualistic and it's each of us is so important, you know, and whatever path you're walking, it is important to share with others. And however we do that, and as Jerry has said, you know, the 9 principles of belief have been kind of a groundbreaker for her, and it's the great ones to follow. I just want to say, everybody, have a good week and carry on. I don't know what else to say, Michael.
Well, I think you covered it, and that was very well said. And so I guess with that, I think we're going to call it an evening. And Jerry, thank you again so much. You've been fantastic. Dr. Vicky, thank you. And thank you, everybody, for joining us. We hope that you join in next week. And until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.